Okay, and then also in the article, this is like the third thing I wanted to ask you about that you looked into. It said that you started this after. Now that I'm remembering this and looking at the notes, I do kind of remember that I was confused about when you started hacking. But it said you started looking into 9/11, or you started right after 9/11. You sort of did look into 9/11 a little bit. How extensive was your hacking as far as looking for information on 9/11, and what kind of information did you find?
I'm not going to talk about that.
Oh, really? Okay. Any reason you want to give why you won't talk about it at all?
I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And did you look into, did you try at all to look into the CIA at all? I know you went into NASA, like we said, went into NASA and DARPA, and you tried to look into 9/11. What other organizations were you looking into when you're doing your hacking, government ones, and especially notably, were you looking into the CIA at all or anybody else like that?
Not the CIA or the FBI, no.
And what about like the NSA or HARP or anything like that?
Apparently, I didn't realize at the time that Fort Meade is where the NSA live, and I think I was on a few machines there. But I'm sure it's not all NSA there, and I'm sure if there were NSA machines there, they wouldn't have had blank administrator passwords.
Tell me a little bit about how the government wanted to cut a deal with you, and how that sort of fell apart, because it sounded like they were offering you a deal, but then they wouldn't put it down on paper. Tell me, like, what you can tell me about them cutting a deal.
Yeah, precisely. They said, if you don't force us to extradite you, to go through the extradition process, if you come across of your own free will, then you'll only do 3 or 4 years in jail. But with no right of public appeal and no right of comment. And I said, well, you know, give me that in writing. And they won't give any guarantees or anything in writing. And, you know, it's just not a deal, is it? To make an offer and then not put it in writing.
Okay. And a lot of people say, sort of facetiously, I guess, they say, well, they shouldn't be prosecuting him, they should be giving him a job. Was there any talk of you getting a job out of this, or did you offer to work for them, and did any sort of aspect of you end up, you know, becoming a part of the organization come up?
No, it hasn't come up.
Did you even sort of like throw that out there where you were like, hey, listen, I'll play along, I'll show you how I did this, and then maybe you guys can go away?
I think a different lawyer from before did actually say something, or he intimated to me that he said something, but not without me having asked him. And he said the reply was something like, we can't be seen to work with him, or we can't be seen to have someone like him work for us.
Okay. I guess then there's sort of like this devil's advocate question, which is like, if somebody who was up to something nefarious was caught, the UFO reason is like a great alibi. And I guess, you know, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations were always seemed to be a part of investigating potential communists back in the day who they thought were working under the cover of ufology. What's that?
I've never heard of that, Corky.
Oh, yeah, you should check out, where's the book here? Yeah, you should check out Nick Redfern's book, On the Trail of the Saucer Spies. You're actually mentioned in it. Yeah, you should check it out. But it's you look good, don't worry. but, like, to ask that devil's advocate question, like, you can back it up that you were looking for, that you were interested in UFOs before this all started. This wasn't like, how do you answer the critics who are like, who don't believe you, who think that nobody would really do that, and you must be an America hater or something. I don't know, you know, what do you say to those people who don't believe your story?
Well, I suppose the only way to back it up would be if before I still had files back to when I was 14 years old, so 26 years ago.
Yeah.
The fact that all my mates could tell you that for years I've been nutted about them. Typical sci-fi nut, really, you know, so.
Do you find a lot of people are disbelieving of the story, or is it sort of like they're sort of just as mystified as you are that this has become such a big thing?
Find maybe, yeah, maybe 5 to 10% of people think, oh, is that a cover? And also, most journalists have to ask that question, you know, just to be balanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you thought about the attention that your story has drawn from the mainstream and from the esoteric circles? What have you thought about how this story sort of exploded in the past year, especially? What's your perspective on being on the inside of this 15 minutes of fame?
I think it's interesting seeing the inner mechanisms of government. The fact that I could easily be prosecuted in my own country, and yet when I asked someone from prosecution service why it was handed over to the Bush administration, they said this came from way over my head. It came from very high up. So whether that means someone higher up the Crown Prosecution Service or someone higher up than the Crown Prosecution Service, I'm not sure. And it also gives you an eye for the injustices that other people are having happen to them as well.
Yeah.
You know, I've stuck my name on a few petitions since then too, so. And the great unfairness of the law at the moment in your country and in mine, we're all experiencing a sweeping loss of civil liberties. Under the guise of freedom and choice in some cases as well. And it's made me a lot more aware of all that.
And, what have you thought about, I wouldn't go so far as to say celebrityhood, but what have you thought about this sort of, like, newfound celebrity that you have within the esoteric community, especially within ufology, and I'm sure in the UK, because I used to live there for about 4 or 5 months in the year 2000, and I really enjoyed their papers, and they have an extensive media, and it's very, this is the sort of story that they would love, I'm sure, and I'm sure they're all over it. What's been your perspective on that celebrityhood?
Well, I mean, not being on the net, I haven't seen a lot of what might be going on there in discussion groups and stuff like that. To me, I mean, it's an interesting story, obviously, for the media. I need to get my side of it out as well, and you know, cut away all this damaging super hacker image that's been cast.
Yeah.
And also, it's just a symbiotic relationship. The media helps me also raise public awareness about the extradition law.
Exactly.
And the UFO thing is kind of unfortunate. I think if I was going to choose an alibi, I would have chosen something much better than that. You know, this is really what I was doing. God's honest truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of... A lot of people are surprised that there hasn't been a lot more, you know, little green men jokes going on, a lot more ridicule. I think people, you know, the surprises, you know, apparently intelligent, people, you know, sensible, hard-working person... is going after something so crazy as UFOs and using, you know, such alarming methods of getting it as unauthorized access to government computers. But when people aren't on the inside of a particular field of endeavor, you don't realize the serious side of the subject and all the positive things that could possibly be tied to it.
Exactly, yeah. And like you said, that you wouldn't have chosen the UFO as an alibi. Has that sort of been pushed to the side, in a sense, by the media, where you are in favor of the extradition law? Because, like you said, that's a big story over in the UK, and there's a lot of contention over it. Has that been maybe the main crux of the coverage of your story, as opposed to the UFO thing?
Yeah, a lot of them are sort of rehashes of previous interviews and previous facts. They're just write-ups of the hearings. So you do get a lot of just, you know, chronological statements of facts. But you do, it does tend to be headlined, you know, the UFO hacker or the Pentagon hacker, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sort of a trigger line, whatever it's called.
Your first interview came out last summer, I believe it was the John Ronson interview. Well, that was 2005, and you were the whole thing started in 2002 as far as you getting arrested. Why was there that window of time between the arrest and all of a sudden now you're coming out?
I wanted to show that I wasn't one to, you know, go around hooting to the press. I've been out, I've done this, I find this American military security's crap, blah, blah, blah. And I wanted them to see that I was a sensible person that hadn't done any damage, didn't intend to do any damage, and regretted his actions, and you know, just wanted to try in his own country, and definitely would never do them again. So I was just being very quiet.
How did it come about that the first interview with you was with John Ronson? I'm only interested in that really because he's sort of like a pretty well-known esoteric writer, and he's well-known in the UK. I'm surprised that you got someone who was knowledgeable about the subject for the first interview. Was that something that you arranged? Was that something that he went after? Or was that the newspaper's idea? How did that first interview come about?
There was two friends of mine were in a place here called Wood Green Shopping City, and John Ronson was doing a book signing, and they told him about my plight, and they bought a book off me, he signed it for me with a little message. And so when it all kicked off again, he contacted my solicitor and made an interview request, and it was basically because of that small connection, the book and the signing and the little message.
Do you think you've been not really in the Ronson article or in general, do you think you've been portrayed pretty well by the media for the most part?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty balanced, really.
For some reason, it seems like in a lot of places you are, they call you a kid, or you're sort of characterized as a kid. I don't know if it's because of the hacking or what. Have you noticed that? And why do you think that is, and what do you think about the fact that you're like, are you 40 now?
Yeah, 40, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think of the fact that people seem to think that you are like a 20-year-old kid or a 17-year-old kid or something when it turns out you're actually like 40? I know, it's really strange. Why do you think people seem to think that you're a kid? And why do you think that perception seems to, keep perpetuating itself?
I'm really not sure, you know. I think maybe because I've been running around poking my nose where it doesn't belong, yeah. yeah, it is quite weird. I mean, you're right, I noticed that. I guess, and what's this kids thing going on? You know, young guy, kid, so, you know.
Yeah. Now, I pretty much, because I was arranging this interview myself, so I know what went down, but you can dissuade any rumors of that there was something nefarious that you didn't make the Coast to Coast AM interview. There's always people who want to throw, conspiracy theories out there, but it wasn't something like that. But I wanted to make sure that we got that on the record, that there wasn't anything like that going on. It was a phone situation, correct?
Oh, yeah, completely, yeah.
Okay.
I'm famous for losing my phone, most other things.
are you particularly frustrated that you don't have sort of the thing to throw at the government and the pictures maybe? Because if you had them, maybe then they would leave you alone. Would they be like, let's not mess with this guy because he's got the goods on us and we don't want to, if you give us the pictures, we'll go away. Are you frustrated that you sort of have your hands tied on that?
Yeah, if I did have anything like that, I think why this whole process would have been fast-tracked somewhat.
Yeah. And we established here in the interview that you were really held back by the slow connection speed and the giant size of the pictures to get anything, and you don't have any notes or anything, or you didn't take any handwritten notes or anything during this time, right?
I did have lots of stuff in CD, but that's all with ONI now, probably.
Oh, okay, so then... So when they came and got you, they took all that stuff, too?
Yeah, yeah.
Those bastards.
I know.
And while once this story broke, and maybe even up to before it, were there any other strange occurrences that you can think of that might have happened? And I'm specifically thinking of the Matthew Bevin case, because when the story broke about his arrest, he started receiving strange phone calls from foreigners and foreign languages, and I think they were Chinese, but I'm not positive. And he sort of had having some strange occurrences. They moved, but the people found their new phone number, and they were receiving harassing phone calls. Have you experienced anything like that, harassing phone calls, strange phone calls, or just random people that you're meeting?
I've only had two unexplained things and one case of tailing. The two unexplained things, the first was that my car disappeared shortly after the initial arrest. And, if it had been towed away, I'd expect to get a letter from the police or whatever. That's how it happens out here, but nothing like that ever materialized. The second thing was that, and this was only about 6 months ago, I think, my girlfriend and I were asleep. I'm not sure what time it was dark. It felt like I was in real heavy sleep.
Yeah.
And I woke up with a really sharp pain in my heel. And I turned the light on. And for some reason, I got into bed with my socks on. I saw this blood stain through my socks. Pulled off the left sock. And there were two perfectly circular puncture wounds in my left heel. One of which still had the perfectly circular flap of skin hanging off it. I haven't actually mentioned this to anyone before, but I've read it in... I met Timothy Good, the British UFO author, recently.
Yeah.
And he gave me one of his books. And it's full of stories of people with exactly the same wound, like a sort of mini... mini paper punch.
Strange.
And I thought, crikey. Yeah. I don't have any abduction memories or anything like that, so it's probably a rat.
Did you take any pictures of the injury?
No, I didn't think anything spooky at the time. I thought, what the hell was that? I just couldn't explain it at all.
Yeah. And you had an incident, you said, of tailing?
Oh, yeah, when I had to deliver a van from London to Hastings, I think it was, and there was a dark blue Mercedes, five or six cars behind us at all times.
And did you check it out at all, or was it just a one-time thing?
We had to pull over once, and then I couldn't see it behind us. And then we pulled away again. The only thing that looked odd was a huge American-type limousine that pulled down.
Weird.
But they didn't follow us along.
And go back a little bit to your car disappearing. Tell me about that. It just vanished, and then you never heard anything from the police, and what'd you do, call them?
No, because I'd actually run out of tax at the time, which is why I was really worried about getting a letter. So I decided, because it didn't cost very much, just to write it off.
Oh, wow. And you...
I hope the tax man doesn't listen to this show.
And you didn't... you didn't mention anything about any. You didn't get any weird phone calls or any contacts from strange foreigners who might have been trying to recruit you or anything like that.
No.
Okay. Now, what do you have you heard from anybody in ufology regarding your case? You're really pretty much pretty popular in ufology. You're talked about a lot on the net. I hear your name mentioned quite a bit. Have you talked to any big name ufologists? Have they talked to you at all about your case?
There's been lots of emails that get printed out for me, and then occasionally get someone I just dictate and they type back to.
Yeah.
I mentioned previously Timothy Good. Has been very, very helpful and very, very interesting as well. I'm terrible with people's names. There has been a lot of interest. And there's been Stephen Greer has sent emails of support, although I haven't spoken to him directly yet.
Yeah.
And there is one guy who's going to kill me, so I can't remember his name. He's a British representative of the Disclosure Project. He's been really good and given me lots of DVDs and books and stuff to... occupy my bored mind with. So there's lots of support there, definitely, and I'm very thankful for it.
That's good. Has anybody in ufology come out against you that you know of, or spoken out against what you did, or said that you shouldn't have done it, or anything like that, or contacted you and been like, thanks a lot, you're bad for us, or anything along those lines?
I think a lot of them are very level-headed, and in the write-ups have said, obviously he shouldn't have used such a method. But I haven't read of anything where anyone's said anything really bad, no.
That's good. And have you, one ufologist I wanted to ask you about, have you talked to at all or heard any comment from regarding your case from Nick Pope, who was the British...
the MOB guy.
Yeah. Has he said anything about the case at all in the media at all?
No communications there.
And what about his successor, who is the official government? What about that position in the UK right now? Have they said anything about your case? Because they're kind of like the UFO people of the UK, and yours is a UFO case in some ways, in a lot of ways. Have they said anything about it?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Huh.
You mean the official UFO, the MOD?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Have the MOD people said anything to the media over in the UK about your case? Because, it's a pretty big UFO case, and I figured maybe they would have gone to the MOD for a comment.
No, not to my knowledge. But, that's quite a good avenue of inquiry, actually. I haven't read anything of that.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't. And then you mentioned you got a lot of emails from Stephen Greer. He was on Coast to Coast AM like 2-3 weeks ago, and he said that he was writing some kind of legal document that was in Latin that I didn't even understand. But he said he was writing something for you. Can you tell us anything about that? Has he mentioned that he was going to write something for you, and what is the extent of that?
That is in the process of happening. Yeah, he is writing a legal document, which I think is basically describing the fact that these unacknowledged special access projects are in fact unconstitutional to begin with, and that any attempt to opening them up to the public is in the public interest. But I'm not sure. I think that's going to be the general wind of it, because that Latin term threw me as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a legal eagle, so I wouldn't know that.
Me neither.
Let me see. These are kind of out of order now. Do you consider yourself a martyr for ufology? Because in a lot of ways, you're sort of painted that way in the coverage. So, do you think of yourself as a martyr for ufology? And what do you think of being characterized in that way?
I think that's funny. No, I'm curiosity killed the cat, basically. But not a martyr, not at all. I don't agree with sort of self-aggrandizement in any shape or form.
Okay, yeah, because there's a sort of undertone to your story where people in ufology hold you up as someone who's like taking a bullet for the greater good, and you're not really comfortable with that sort of characterization.
No, not at all.
What's the timetable from here as far as your case goes? Like you said, you were arrested in 2002. Why has it taken so long for this to play out? Obviously, you said they were passing this new legislation and everything. Where's this headed from here?
The Home Secretary has to make up his mind whether to support the extradition request, and that could happen tomorrow, or it could happen 11 months down the line, as happened with the last request of this kind. And then after that, the appeals process starts.
And what?
Assuming it doesn't go my way, the appeals process will start.
Yeah, and how long do you think that's going to play out?
I don't know, it could be anything from 6 months to maybe a couple of years. It's hard to say, actually.
And what do you think? Have you any idea, like, when this thing's going to be settled altogether? Like, when you're either going to exhaust your appeals or you're going to get your side in this?
Well, at the very, very outside, if it was, say, it took a year for the Home Secretary to make his decision and he decided against me, then you'd appeal in the High Courts, I think it is. Say that was another year. And then maybe the House of Lords, if it were allowed, then perhaps another year.
Oh, okay.
And then maybe the European Court of Human Rights. Who knows?
Yeah, so you're going to keep fighting this as far as you can take it.
Yeah, because it's not just me. There's 400 or so other people undergoing the same process of extradition to America without any presentation of evidence. And this 2003 Extradition Act was made to fast-track terrorist cases, and it's being used for white-collar crime. And yeah, just the law has to be changed, basically. We have to have prima facie evidence and the treaty to be signed by the Senate as well as the UK government.
Okay, and like you said, you're lumped in with a group of people here, 400 people, and there are a lot of white-collar crimes?
That's right, yeah.
All right, now, if it goes down bad and you end up thrown in the clink here, what do you want to say to the folks out there now that are either doing this sort of hacking or maybe considering it, or think it was a good idea, or think it was worth it? Would you dissuade those type of folks from doing this?
Absolutely. Do not do it. If you want to practice hacking, just get two machines at home, or arrange between, if I don't even arrange between you and a friend on the internet, because then your ISP will get suspicious. Just get two machines in one house, and then practice on each other.
Yeah, but don't be going into government computers, because they'll probably end up getting you after the long run.
No way, Jose, exactly.
So it's sort of a cliched question, but was it worth it? You didn't end up really with you sort of saw some of the stuff, but you didn't really end up achieving the long-term goal that you had in mind. So was all this was all this craziness and what's going on with you and how you might end up in jail, was it worth it? Would you do it all over again, or would you totally not?
I totally wouldn't do it all over again.
All right, it's kind of a cliched question, but you kind of, you know, you have to ask. Is there anything else that hasn't come out yet that you're sort of holding back on, that maybe you're waiting on, or are you throwing it all, everything you got out there? Is there anything you're sitting on right now that you're like, well, if it gets to this point, then I should probably say this, or anything like that? You know, you don't have to say what it is, but is there anything you're sort of sitting on right now that might be helpful for you in the long run?
Well, as I say, every time I'm asked that question, if there was, I wouldn't tell you yet.
Yeah. All right. And what can people who are listening to this interview do to help you out? I know you have there's an online petition at, let me read the website here, www.freegary.org.uk. That's sort of the hub of the Gary McKinnon case. Who's behind that?
That's someone, a friend of mine, whom I'd noticed when I was allowed internet access for the first 3 years between 2002 and 2005, who was making very knowledgeable comments on a news group, and I got in contact with him. He's a very knowledgeable man who does a lot of good for other people, and he's running the website.
Well, you get the website there, freegary.org.uk. And on there, there's an online petition that people can check out and sign, hopefully. Right now, what else can people do to help you out other than the online petition? Are you taking donations or anything? Can they send you money? And is it advisable maybe that they contact their U.S. representatives and the U.S. media?
Not looking for money. I think if people can find out more about the extradition law, and maybe write to their MPs or the politicians or the senators or whatever, because it seems to have made the Irish community very angry in America as well, I think, you know, in relation to Irish politics over here in the UK. And so, you know, it's going to affect a lot of people, and we shouldn't have treaties that aren't ratified. We shouldn't have treaties that are one-ended, and, yeah, that's the most important point of all this, I think.
Yeah. And what about, I think you might have answered this, but what about the listeners contacting their congressmen and their media and everything that they should tell them? Is there a specific thing that you said the Senate hasn't voted on it or something like that? Is there something that people should call their senator and be like, don't vote for this thing? Is there like a specific name for that?
I'm not sure if there's a specific name for the sort of whole, but it's the 2003 extradition treaty, and it's UK-US only. And I think there should be pressure on them to vote for it and to ratify it, because I don't think they will ratify it, where you don't have to give evidence to extradite anyone. And I think if that were happening on the American side, everyone would recognise it as unconstitutional and fight that particular aspect of the law.
Yeah. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, Gary. I know
thank you, sir.
I know that you don't do too many interviews, or that it's hard to track you down, and you're very busy, and I'm sure you want to enjoy the time you have now before things get even worse, and you don't know. You live every day like it's your last, I guess, at this point, right?
Or your first, maybe.
What's that?
Or your first, maybe.
There you go, exactly. Well, like I said, thank you very much for being on the show. Is there anything you want to say to close it out? Is there anything that you want, like a message that you want to get out there to the people that are listening to Drive Home?
The truth is worth searching for, but always listen to your girlfriend in the end.
Sounds great. Well, Gary, thank you very much. Like I said, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I've been watching your case for a long time, and I'm really hopeful that things work out for you. I know, like you said, you're worried about it. I'm really worried about it myself. You know, it's not good. It's not good for Americans or UK citizens. And yes, you made some mistakes here, but at the same time, you know, they were you're doing it for the greater good, and I appreciate that, and I'm sure many people in ufology appreciate that. I want to wish you the best of luck with your case. Hopefully, we can keep in touch, and as further things come up, and as this case develops, you can come back and let us know what's going on with the case.
Okay.
Anytime you wanna speak to the masses, you know, you can contact me. You got my information. I'd be happy to have you on the show, especially if things get crazy again. You know, I'll drop you a line. We'll bring you back. We'll try and get the word out to as many people as possible. Like I said, good luck with the case. Thank you very much for appearing on the show. You're the perfect guest to close out Banal of America Audio Season 1. I wanted to have somebody that really was making a serious impact in ufology, and I think you've completely made huge news, worldwide news, and I appreciate the fact that you'd come on our show and talk to us and really dig into the case like we did this last hour. So thank you very much for being on the show, and good luck with your case.
Well, thanks for having me, Tim, and thanks, everyone, for listening, and enjoy your vacation.
That does it for the Banal of America Audio Season 1 season finale. I want to thank Gary McKinnon for being our special guest for this historic edition of Banal of America Audio. Gary's a very busy man. He has a lot on his plate. He has a lot to worry about, but he took the time to talk to us here at Banal of America Audio, and I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our great listeners do as well. You can find out more information about Gary and his case at the website www.freegary.org.uk. And as this is the Banal of America Audio Season 1 season finale, I want to thank all the great guests we've had over the course of the last 9 months. Let me run through the names for you. I want to thank these people for taking the time to talk to us. If it wasn't for these folks, we would have no audio show. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have 32 episodes in the tank and be having this monumental season finale episode. So let's hear it for the following folks: Jim Mars, Marshall Klarfeld, Terry Hansen, Robert Miles, Greg Bishop, Peter Robbins, Grant Cameron, Adam Gorightly, Alfred Weber, Stanton Friedman, Melinda Leslie, Colm Kelleher, Steve Bassett, Lauren Coleman, Jerry E. Smith, Nick Redfern, Andre Eglishon, Richard Dolan, Joe Fex, Ryan Wood, James Gutman, Royce Myers, and of course Gary McKinnon here for the Banal of America Audio Season 1 season finale. Thank you to all the great guests from the past 9 months. It's been just an amazing adventure for me. Personally, it's been a learning experience like no other. And I'm really looking forward to producing the next series from Banal of America Audio, Banal of America Audio Season 2. While we're dishing out the big thanks, I want to thank also Leslie, Chiron, and R. Lee of BanalofAmerica.com for your help and support with the entire audio series and BanalofAmerica.com, the website. You guys are my support structure. You keep me going. When I fall down, they pick me up. When I'm confused, worried, elated, they're there with me throughout the process, and I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. I'm proud to have had you on board for this project. And, of course, I want to thank all of the great Banal of America audio listeners. I never thought this audio series would ever get to be this big. It started out as a fun little lark, and it's become just an amazing vehicle for esoteric researchers, and I'm just tremendously proud of what this audio series has become, and I owe that to the listeners. It's you guys who send me the emails, who post links in your blogs, who tell your friends, who post stuff about it in the forums, who click the PayPal button and give me some cash to help pay for the costs. I want to thank you guys. You are the listening public. You are what makes this show happen. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. I will truly miss talking to you every week here and bringing you these interviews week in and week out for the last 9 months. I'm really going to miss the experience, and I'm really looking forward to when I make my return in September with Banal of America Audio Season 2. If you are one of those longtime listeners of Banal of America Audio and you've enjoyed the series as a whole and you want to help us out and you want to grease the wheels for Banal of America Audio Season 2 to get rolling, click the PayPal button at banalofamerica.com. Make a donation. Now's the perfect time to do it. Season 1 has concluded, and it would certainly help towards getting Season 2 up and running in a timely fashion. What is on the agenda next for Banal of America Audio? I'm glad you asked. This summer, expect possibly one or two Banal of America Audio special session interviews, and probably maybe two or three Banal of America Audio best of editions that we'll post at some point throughout the summer. And then around mid-August, you can expect to start hearing the rumblings, the rumors, the teases, and the hype for Banal of America Audio Season 2. I've already been hard at work setting up who's going to be on the show, making the necessary contacts, doing the research, reading the books, listening to their previous interviews. And then we're looking at late September for the season premiere of Banal of America Audio Season 2. I already have the list of guests lined up. I'm already working on getting it all secured and taped throughout the summer. So at some point you can expect an announcement at banalofamerica.com. Stay tuned to banalofamerica.com, folks. Just because we're not putting out weekly audio sessions does not mean that we do not put out top-notch esoteric material. We update daily, sometimes twice daily. We'll have a full slate of features, fun, weekly columns, and all kinds of stuff at banalofamerica.com. That's B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. And with that, I'm Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.